Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
New Amsterdam Radio starts now. What's going on, citizens? We are back for another episode after a hiatus, which I did see coming, but I did not prepare for. Thanks so much for bearing with me. Didn't have any program lined up for you. I know I should probably pretend like it was all part of some grand scheme, but frankly, I went on vacation and I forgot about it. I spent 2 weeks or a week and a half and down under in Australia. The time zone differences made making episode kind of not even feasible. Now I got the honesty out the way. Welcome, citizens, on another edition of the show for you. Those who have ideas inside your brain are citizens of the city of creative. NewAmsterdam.com, KNAW, Amsterdam.com. I'm Flobo Boyce, the mayor, hanging in a very soggy mayor's office. It's kind of one of the wettest California winters I've been a part of. I've been out here for about a decade and a half, and I had a bit of a leak in my apartment the last couple of days. Had to get that figured out. But we're back. We're focused. Kind of looking forward to spring, or we say here in SoCal, just going back to regular weather, a bit not raining and being sunny all the time. My guest is John Follis, who is a self-proclaimed career ad man, because that definitely sounds like he's a superhero, but is now giving back by sharing his expertise. In fact, I looked up and I said, hey, John, if you want to promote anything, like any kind of book or any kind of YouTube channel, and he has those, but he was like, no, I'm totally fine. And so being able to sit down with another creative and talk about what it means to be an entrepreneur and how you went from one phase of your career to another has been pretty fun. I do think there's some really actionable insight. A lot of times we have guests on our show with cool ideas, but John actually mentions things he did and what he does to maintain the rising tide at times as it is of being self-employed. Now, he's retired as an ad man now, but he does work in as a musician and other things as well. So you're definitely going to enjoy that. Just want to say, if you haven't already, check out SeatGeek to get yourself a ticket to all kinds of events around town. We're talking concerts, talking sports and all that jazz. I use SeatGeek and you should too. Use promo code FLOBITO, that's FLOBITO, for $20 off your first order. SeatGeek, tell them FLOBITO sent you. That's me, y'all. And even though we're getting ready for the next season of the United Greek League, it's kind of sad to say goodbye. The defending champ, Orlando Aces, are heading themselves out to the grid. New Amsterdam will be cheering them on from afar. Last year's partnership season is hands down one of my favorite things I've done in my adult life as far as getting something off the bucket list. And we do nothing but wish them the best as they head on to the other season. Orlando Aces, United Grid League, good luck. Now, enough of my rambling and jammering. Now it's time for my chat with John Follis on New Amsterdam Radio. Welcome back to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creative thinkers and doers. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boyce, in the mayor's office, hanging with creative people who are doing the dang thing. Actually, before we went live, I was talking with this absolute genius, John Follis, talking about marketing and advertising and making a name and niche for yourself. John, thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, Flobo, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's all mine because I'm looking at you and I'm looking at my background. We have awards in the back of the room. I love that. I love the energy. What do you have currently in the back of your office there?
Oh, those are some old advertising awards.
That's it. All right. Let's talk about the role of advertising. I mean, you are what they would say a legend, right? Decades
no,
in the
no,
game.
People would not say that. No,
I will say that because you have maybe done it for such a high level, such a long time. When did you decide that advertising was the path, man?
When I decided was when I got pulled aside by one of my instructors after my second year in college. And she said, have you decided what you want to be when you grow up? Because I didn't know. I was halfway through college. I really had no idea. But I was always artistic growing up. I was creative. My mom was an art instructor. So I kind of had that in-house training as a child growing up. But as far as the profession, I really had no clue. And it had it not been for this instructor, second year of college, who said, listen, I think you're really talented and you should transfer out of this school to a school that's got a lot more programs that deal with someone like yourself who's creative, where you can really develop that talent, whatever it may be, whether it's fashion design or advertising or architecture, whatever it might be, you need to leave the school and go to some place where you can get that developed. So that was really the turning point in the beginning of my career in advertising, where I transferred to Syracuse. I said, do you have any colleges in mind? And she said, well, Syracuse University is a school I would recommend. And coincidentally, that's where my dad graduated. So when I told my dad this story, it was not a hard sell.
Okay.
To do the transfer, since he was paying for it. So at that point, then the question became, okay, what do I do? And I was the person I was speaking to once I got in Syracuse, I thought was a guidance counselor. And it turned out to be the chairman of the advertising department, because he said you should go into advertising. So I think he was a little bit biased about that. So I kind of stumbled my way into advertising as a career.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the whole stumbling aspect of it, I always feel like the best things in life are kind of like, oh, check this out. I'll see where it goes. That first couple of classes, was it instantly be clicked to you, or was it kind of like, I don't know if this is my thing? Like, was there like a filling out process in that path?
So I was kind of behind the eight ball, because Syracuse had a 3-year program, and I was starting there at my, it was my third year of college when I started. So I had to basically do a 3-year program in 2 years. So my courses were kind of stacked, and most of the courses I did pretty well, but one of the most important courses, it was kind of an advertising 101 class, I did not get along with the instructor. And throughout my academic career, anything that was artistic or design related, I used to get A's in. And I started out getting C's in this class and going downhill from there. And I was getting nervous because in the program, you have to get, I think, at least a B in order to keep moving on. And like I said, I started getting C's and was going downhill pretty quickly. And finally, the instructor pulled me aside with about 3 weeks left to go and said, you know, you really have no clue about what you're doing. And let me give you some advice. You could stick it out the next 3 weeks and take the grade I'm going to give you, but you're not going to be happy about it. Oh, wow. Or you can drop the class and, get an incomplete. And basically, the guy was going to flunk me.
Right.
And this was like an advertising 101 class that I had to do really well in. And I didn't realize, you know, now I can look back and realize it was more of a personality issue with the instructor. Mm-hmm. But it was a hard pill to swallow at that point, because this guy was someone who worked in New York. He used to fly up to teach at Syracuse. So he was a working professional. So I took his advice pretty seriously. And on the way, I said, can I think about it? He said, yeah, I'll give you 24 hours. Let me know. And on the way out of the door, out of the room, he said, let me give you some last piece of advice. Do not go into advertising.
Oh, wow.
So that was not a very good start. It was kind of the opposite of what I was told the prior year when I was pulled aside by the instructor at that other college, who said, you're super talented. You should pursue something. And this guy was basically saying the opposite.
Yeah.
So at that point, I had a choice to make. Do I choose the right career? And because I was doing pretty well in the other classes, I figured, let me just try the same course with a different instructor. And fortunately, that was the difference. At that point, I realized that it was less about my lack of talent than it was about the relationship. And that was a really good lesson to learn, because mm-hmm. throughout my career, I crossed paths with many other people who were in management positions who were controlling my career. And I did not get along with a couple of them. And so I learned very early on from this experience in college that sometimes it's not necessarily my lack of talent, but sometimes it's a personality issue.
Yeah. So let's get into that a little bit. I mean, you went to Manhattan, like, which is apparently from the outside looking in, the mega of advertising. You see Mad Men, right? Made it more popular for the masses. But I do feel like it's a clash of personalities, because it is the intersection between art and commerce. Am I near there, or is it a whole different beast altogether?
What I'm really talking about, Flobo, is a corporate environment. When you're correct. Working in a big New York City advertising agency, which I had never had that experience before. You know, I just out of college a year or two, you realize that corporate politics can really determine your success at that company. And even more so, I would say, than your talent. Talent will always be important. But in college, I was taught that it was all about talent. And once I got it working, I realized, yes, that's a part of it. But what's an even bigger part of it in a corporate environment, again, I'm talking about a big agency, a big corporate environment, you really have to know how to navigate that. And some people are naturally good at it for whatever reason. I don't know how you become naturally good at it. I was not good at it. Maybe because my dad was an entrepreneur and I had kind of entrepreneurial genes, and entrepreneurial genes and attitude do not really play well in a corporate environment. I don't know. I see you smiling a little bit, so I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I absolutely know what you're talking about, because some people are just born to be brown nosers. Let's be real.
Okay, well, that's another way to put it.
No, the entrepreneurial spirit, it's a lot harder for some people to wrap their heads around. But once you are a maverick, to use that kind of thing, that the animal allegory, it's kind of hard to sit there and be like, wait a minute, I feel like you're saying something, but there's a tinge of disrespect there. I'm not going to sit here and take that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I had an irreverent streak kind of going through me. It occasionally displayed itself in that corporate environment. And they don't like that. They don't like that kind of rebellious or entrepreneurial or irreverent attitude. And if they see that in an employee, I think that kind of works against you in that environment. Because like you said, they like people that, you know, get in line and kind of follow the rules and things like that. So that's one of the reasons why I had such a difficult time. I got fired 4 times in 8 years.
Yeah, that was my question here. I was like, it's 4 times in 8 years. I mean, was it like, and now they say I'll let you go or downsizing, but I kind of picture back then it was kind of like the you're fired or pack your stuff. Like was it like the
not exactly. I mean, give myself a little bit of credit. Two of the 4 times were, I think, directly related to the fact that the guy who brought me in and I was supposed to be working for decided about a month after he brought me in that he was going to get another job, jump ship, got another job. So I kind of found myself without any support. You know, if you're working, if the guy who wants you at that agency is no longer at that agency, doesn't mean that you're going to lose your job, but it doesn't make it easier to succeed when there's not someone there encouraging you or trying to help you succeed. And I think in both of those cases, it was kind of a slow death once that guy left for another job.
Yeah, that's kind of how I got out of corporate as well. Like we had some mergers and someone had different philosophies. And we were actually talking about this before we went live. I worked at a test and measurement equipment rental company, and they were kind of leaning into the content play, and they really wanted to build a knowledge hub and have us be like the experts in the space and have that native advertising kind of thing. And then the merger happened, guy came in, is what they call old school. And you know, that's always the worst when it comes to new ideas. And he wanted us to go back to doing flyers. And I wasn't a designer. And I said, I can't do flyers. I can do everything else. I can even give out the flyers. I can't make them. And you saw like my role evaporate. But that said, though, I mean, you had a bunch of wins in your career before you retired. I have my notes here that you were behind a PSA campaign for the NBA that got so much notoriety. You got like thanked at the White House. Like, how that happened? How did that come together?
Oh man, it was very strange. The whole experience of how we got the assignment to do this national TV campaign for child abuse prevention was just it's so bizarre because. As a creative person, you never know, at least with me, I never know when I'm going to get hit with an idea. And the whole experience that got us this national TV campaign that was so successful that I got invited to the White House along with a dozen other people from around the country who were involved in nonprofit and public service work, started with me watching TV one night, seeing something on TV that sparked an idea for an ad for child abuse prevention that I showed my business partner, who thought it was a great ad. And that was the start of it. So we had this idea for a child abuse ad that I came up with and reached out to the national organization, which was in Chicago. And they said, well, as a matter of fact, we're going to be in New York in a couple of weeks. We were in New York. And they said, if you want to meet us, you could show us your idea. They told us we should meet them at the offices of the NBA. Now, why they were at the NBA, we had no idea. All we knew is that that's where they wanted us to meet us, wanted right. Us to meet them. So we went up to the, and we went to the NBA thinking we're going to meet with these two women. And we walk into this, the receptionist says, okay, you know, you're coming to the meeting now, guys, me and my partner. We walk into a room. Instead of these two women from this organization, we're sitting around a conference table with them and five people from the NBA.
Okay.
And so I have this ad that I didn't think the NBA would have any interest in. And all of a sudden, I'm not just presenting to these two women. I'm presenting to like eight people, including people from the NBA.
Was that an adjustment? Did you have to like change up your presentation? Or was it like the same?
Well, it was weird because the ad featured Adolf Hitler.
Oh, right.
who was abused as a child. And that was this idea I had. I was playing off the fact that Adolf Hitler was abused as a kid. And the tagline I had was child abuse, it affects all of us, pointing out the fact that you don't need to be an abusive parent. You don't even need to have a kid. And you may be affected by the problem of child abuse because someone like Hitler or who's in a position of power had a screwed up childhood because he was abused and he could be affecting your life as a result of that. So that was this concept that I had. And I have this Hitler ad that I'm showing people from the NBA as well. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize at the time, Flobo, that the child abuse people were meeting with the NBA because they were trying to negotiate a deal where the NBA would give them TV media time to do an ad campaign for their organization to the tune of about $5 million worth of media. Now, this was 1991. So $5 million back then would probably be 10 right now.
Right.
And they needed to find a New York agency. If they got to close the deal with the NBA, they would, because the playoffs were coming up in about a month, they would need to have some guys who knew about advertising and creative to come up with a few TV spots that could run during the NBA playoffs. So it was just kind of a timing thing that we had contacted them a couple of weeks before they were having this meeting. And they figured, let's meet these guys. And if we like them, we'll offer them the chance to do these TV spots.
Yeah.
We knew nothing about this.
Sure.
All I knew is that we showed them the ad. They said, okay, that's interesting. We don't like it. Have you done any TV?
Yeah. Okay.
We didn't know why they were asking us TV. And I was still trying to sell the ad when they asked us if we'd done any TV, not knowing what they were about to offer us. And my partner, who was like started to realize what was going on, was kicking me under the table to stop trying to sell the ad and listen to what they're about to tell us, which was, would you be interested in doing a national TV campaign for child abuse awareness that's going to run during the NBA playoffs? And would you be able to get us some ideas in like a week and a half?
Oh, wow. And so, of course, you're like, of course not. No, I'm just kidding. Like, yeah, so, of course, yeah.
Well, you know, so we were a creative agency, and I was a creative guy, and we were building our reputation on being a hot creative agency. And if you've seen a lot of public service announcements done by any of the sports leagues, half of them just have the player reading a script off of a teleprompter. And I didn't want to do that. We had no interest. They could hire some production company to do that. That's not... there would be no motivation for us to do that. So when they asked us if we were interested, my response was, well, that depends.
Okay, smart.
That depends. I said, I know you want to have your players in the ad, right, somewhere? And they said, yeah. And I basically said to them what I just said to you. Well, if you just want your player reading off of a teleprompter, something that we, a script that we write, you could find someone else to do that. But if you want something that's going to have a little bit more impact, that's going to have some a creative idea behind it, a concept behind it, that involves your player somehow, we'd love to do it. And they kind of looked at each other a little bit and finally said, well, okay. I don't think they were expecting someone to say, well, that depends.
That's what I'm saying. Was that scary to do that? Or was it kind of like in your heart? I mean, that's the NBA's in the room. I was like, whatever you want, man, well, I'll do it.
But, I think that's what, you know, that's what set us apart. And again, you know, I said I had kind of an irreverent streak in me. And I think, you know, a lot of people would not have said that, would not have said, well, that depends. They would have said, yeah, sure, whatever, you know.
Yeah, but, whatever you want.
You know, this was an opportunity for us. We saw this as an opportunity to do an amazing national TV campaign that had an idea, not just a script for a player to read, but really had a powerful, powerful idea that would get people who are watching basketball to like say, whoa, that's an amazing spot, and feel something when they see it. That's the whole thing about great advertising. If you don't get the viewer, whatever media it may be, to like feel something about what you're saying, then it, you know, it's not a good ad. So at that point, the pressure was on because literally the playoffs were coming up. They couldn't, you know, they were on a, this was a non-negotiable deadline.
Sure.
And they then not only needed to approve creative, but then have time to do the production, to shoot the spot, produce the spot, to have it, to be ready to be aired, you know, for the playoffs. So, for about a week and a half, I did nothing but think about this campaign. I mean, every waking moment, because it was such a great opportunity, and came up with three ideas, presented to them, and they all included players in some manner in these spots. And fortunately, they liked all three of them. And next thing I knew, we were on a plane We had to go where the players were. The players don't come to you. They're on their schedule. They're playing the game. So,
sure.
You know, shot one player in Chicago who was on the Bulls. We went to Utah Jazz, shot a player there. And within a month, we had these three of these spots produced, and then they ran. And $5 million, again, this was 91, so now it'd be about twice that. But when you're spending that kind of money on TV time in a 4 or 5 month period, that means those spots are going to be running a lot during every game, multiple times. So two or three weeks after the spots were running, we got a call from the vice president of marketing of the NBA. And he said, we've been doing doing cause marketing for about 20 years. This is not the first time we've done it. We've worked with various causes over the past 20 years, but nothing has gotten the response that these TV spots have gotten for the NBA. We're getting called, you know, this was before email. So he said, you know, we're getting letters, we're getting calls, we're getting people just saying these are great spots. So thank you so much. This has been great. And, you know, it's good PR for the NBA. That's why they do it. You know, Absolutely. It's good public relations. But the weirdest thing was about a month after the spots stopped running, I get something in the mail with a return address of the White House. And I'm thinking it's a joke.
I was thinking like I got caught for something or taxes.
Well, you know, someone looking for a job and they're trying, you know, some creative person thinks they're being super creative by, you know, to get me to open the mail thing. And it's a fancy, you know, this gold embossed lettering on this fancy invitation, and it's for a White House reception. And it says, you know, for the public service work that you did, we'd like to include you with a few others from around the U.S. to be honored at a White House reception. You know, can you make it? Please RSVP. So that was mind blowing.
That was what, Bush 41, the president at the time?
It was the first Bush.
Yeah.
And all I can figure out is that he was watching the playoffs and saw some of these spots, and like other people who reacted, you know, when you're president, you just pick up the phone and you say, find out who did those.
That's pretty cool.
And next thing I know, you know, I was one of, you know, 20 people from around the US that got the invite. So that was amazing.
That must have been surreal. I mean, you say yes, and then you're like, I'm going to the White House to be thanked. That's pretty cool.
Here's the icing on the cake. That ad that I came up with that my partner and I thought was a pretty good ad. We both still thought it was a pretty good ad, even though they rejected it. So a couple of months later, we found a local chapter, child abuse, based in Albany, New York, who looked at that and they said, yeah, that's a great ad. We'll run it. So it ran as a newspaper ad. And a couple months after it ran as a newspaper ad, I get a letter from the United Nations saying that I am the recipient of the first ever special United Nations Public Service Award, because we think that the ad that you did embodies the mission of the United Nations. Wow. Can you come to the UN and get your award?
I didn't even think United Nations knew Albany existed as a city. That's pretty cool, man.
No. This was they so the ad won an advertising award, and all I could figure out is someone from the UN, because they just decided to do this United Nations Public Service Award that they wanted to like find people to give it to.
Yeah.
So they called up the ad council in New York and said, you know, we want to award people doing great public service ad that we think embodies the attitude of the mission of the United Nations. Where would we find a great ad? And they said, well, come to some of the award shows and look at the public service awards. And the ad that we did won some of these awards over here. Mm-hmm. And when they saw the ad, they said, yeah, that one.
that one.
And that's how I got that. So it was a crazy, crazy year.
So the terms are not interchangeable, but I feel like they're also evolving though, between marketing and advertising and sales and stuff. And with media convergence and social media, has it been a bit of a challenge to muddy through that and deal with those lay people who may confuse or conflate one term over the other?
Well, as an entrepreneur, you're working with clients who aren't real sophisticated in advertising and marketing, and it requires a bit of educating them, and you know, without making them sound stupid, you know, you don't want to be insulting. But when Skype became a thing in 2004, Flobo, I was one of the first people to do online consulting in 2004.
Whoa!
It was like this, just didn't have video. We were talking, you know, via voice over IP and doing screen share and stuff like that. So it was great because I was talking to people around the US that I never met in person. And a lot of these business owners were, as I said, they were not that sophisticated with advertising and marketing. So it did require, you know, some explaining about, you know, stuff. So, you know, I understood it, but, you know, a lot of my clients weren't that clear about it.
Yeah, sure. And I guess social media kind of throws the thing into a blender too. Like sometimes you see an advertisement and someone goes, brilliant marketing. And I always wondered, does anyone know the difference anymore?
Yeah, there's so many people on the internet now trying to sell you their magic bullet, their system. And they're great. You know, they're just for the fast talkers, and many of them are very convincing. But you know, I just look at these guys and I just kind of roll my eyes, because that's how they're trying to make their money, just by, you know, selling their program or their cookie cutter solution.
Yeah.
And I said, the only thing that cookie cutter solutions are good for is cookies.
Right.
You know, if you got a business and you need to sell something, get your message out there, whatever it is, you need something a little bit more customized and someone a little bit more professional than some of these fast talkers trying to sell you a cookie cutter solution to your problems.
Sure. Buy my snake oil PDF today. It's not just that world. You're also a filmmaker. I was actually checking out what was called, I think, Leaving God was actually part of the Hollywood Independent Documentary Film Festival. Tell me about that.
So, you know, again, you'll appreciate this as an entrepreneur. You have to constantly be evolving and learning new stuff. And from the beginning, as soon as I got my iMac that had iMovie as part of the software package, which was the late 90s, true, I was dabbling in video and editing. And, you know, I started out as an art director, so I was always very strong visually and design-wise, and then kind of evolved into a writer as well. And once I had the software to create video content, I had a blast with it. You know, not necessarily shooting real video, but just using images and editing them together and using some animation things and stuff like that. You could create a lot from your desktop, create some really great, you know, they used to call them explainer videos in 2012 when that was a big thing, right?
Right, right.
And that was all graphic, you know, graphic design and moving things and transitions and all that stuff. So it's really about the concept. It's, you know, if you've got a strong idea, you don't necessarily need a lot of expensive or fancy production. So I got kind of involved in video that way and started making a lot of video content for my clients in the early 2000s. And then I started doing more longer format storytelling stuff, more narrative type videos. And I've always been a fan of documentary films, Michael Moore and Ken Burns, who did a lot of PBS stuff. And a lot of those, Ken Burns, if you know, is PBS stuff with the Civil War and baseball and all that stuff, Jackie Robinson. I mean, 3/4 of these documentaries were still images with a great narrative, right? Great research, great narrative on there, and just moving in and just doing pans or moves on these still images. Again, it's about storytelling. It's about a concept. And so that's how I created my videos. And I decided to do a documentary about the transition in the United States that I was noticing about people walking away from traditional religion and even a belief in God, which came out of my own personal experience as well. And when I found out that there were a lot of ministers and clergy people who were, quote, coming out as non-believers, I didn't recall seeing a lot of news coverage about these guys. And I thought, geez, you know, I know it's hard. It used to be hard to come out if you were gay, and now it's hard if you're coming out as transgender. But try to put yourself in the shoes of a minister who's been preaching, you know, for 5, 10, sometimes 20 years, and suddenly, you know, what's going through your head? How can you possibly come out? People want to tar and feather you, you know, that are still believers. Yeah. Saying, you mean all the shit that you were telling us for the past 20 years up, you know, up in front of the church every week is you don't believe that anymore. So that was an intriguing story. And I started finding some very isolated reports about these people, because some of them were coming out. So that's how my film started. It started with the idea of these priests and ministers who were coming out and how challenging that was for them. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of weaved it into a more broad story about how this is a trend that's been happening in the U.S. ever since the internet. That was one of the main contributing factors for people to, like, try to get their question challenged, some of the dogma that they've been taught as kids, certainly I was, and kind of do the research and investigate some of this and try to get some of the answers on their own versus just taking, you know, the word of a minister or a priest who is telling you ought to believe this stuff. And so I made this documentary, put a lot of, you know, all of my work. I just, if I'm serious about something, I really put my heart and soul in it, like these child abuse spots. And after about 4 or 5 months, I had a 47-minute mini documentary, and I put it online. And next thing I know, it gets picked up by a website called Top Documentary Films,
okay,
which I never knew existed. And they had it featured on their main page. And it jumped from, I think, 5,000 views to about 15,000 views once it started running on that website. And now it's gotten 40,000 views from 98 countries, and I submitted it to some film festivals, and the one you just mentioned, the Hollywood International Documentary Film Festival, gave it a Best First Time Filmmaker Award.
This on a technical issue, how did you capture? Did you use video? Did you tape list? Did you? What was your workflow?
How did I put it?
It was on video? Was it on digital? Was it?
Digital video. But like I said, I didn't do a lot of raw video. I think I did some cutaway shots of me walking in the woods. So I went out to the woods with my iPad, and I did a POV of my feet walking along a path, and did some cutaway shots of the woods just to create a mood. What I was talking. Did some simple cutaway stuff. I think they call it B-roll.
Sure, filmmaker stuff. So you use mobile to capture.
But a lot of it was still images. But I also lifted a lot of things off of the internet. A lot of video. This is one of the reasons why people say you should get this on Netflix. And my movie, I'd probably have to spend about $20,000 in legal expenses to try to get all the rights for all the stuff I ripped off.
It happens.
And I just pulled it off of the YouTube. I said, listen. I'm not worried about getting sued at this point. I just want to see if I can pull together the elements I need to make the best possible documentary. And if anyone sues me or threatens to sue me, I'll deal with it at that time. At this point, I just want to make the best thing possible and see what happens.
Yeah. I guess not a sequel, but is there another film in the path on the slate at all?
No, I don't think so. Right now I'm practicing my guitar and trying to put together a rock band. So that's my new focus right now.
How do you find the time to do a rock band?
Listen, I'm retired, man. I got all the time in the world.
I know you're retired, but once you get a certain age, all my friends who are in my 30s are like, sorry, kid. I'm busy. I'm tired. I'm not doing outside.
Your friends in your 30s have, they have day jobs.
Fair enough.
I've been playing guitar since I was 13. So I figure I've never been in a band,
Yeah.
So, I'm running out of time to do the band thing.
What kind of music? What kind of rock music?
The stuff I grew up with, classic rock.
Okay,
Beatles, Stones, Led Zeppelin, all that stuff.
Are you pro or anti Eric Clapton?
You mean as a person or?
As a music fan.
I'm not a huge fan. He's all about the blues. I like a few of his songs. I'm more of a Beatles, Stones, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Neil Young. Yeah. Stuff.
I hope you do that because I have no musical talent with instruments. I mean, I play the controller, but that's not music in that way. So props, man. I've tried many instruments and failed.
You gotta start early. I gotta give credit to my parents. I know you gave credit to your parents. I read an interview that you had done, and I feel the same way. When I was 13 years old, my dad felt that it would be important for us to learn an instrument. Me and my sisters. And he said, so what do you want to learn? And I said, well, I guess guitar. And a week later, it came home with a used guitar and said, your lessons start on Thursday.
Wow.
Acoustic? So what's that?
Acoustic?
Oh yeah. 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 You're not going to start a 13-year-old kid on electric.
I had to ask.
No parent in their right mind is going to start a kid on electric guitar.
Due diligence. I have to ask.
But, unless they're masochistical.
Right. Here's this drum set I found that.
Right. Well, yeah.
As we record this, it's only March of 2024. I mean, you talked about the band, but is there anything on the yearly bucket list, the things you want to accomplish this year?
Well, I started jamming with a bass player about 3 months ago. In fact, I'm meeting him tonight, and we meet weekly. And about 2 weeks ago, I hooked up with a keyboard guy. So I'm meeting him once a week. I haven't put the two of them together.
Yeah, I'm about to say, what's going on?
Keeping them separate because that gives me more practice time.
Okay.
I'm kind of double dipping with the two of them. Eventually, I'll introduce the two of them together.
Yeah,
we got to get it up. Got to get it up to a certain level before I kind of. They're both of these guys are super, super talented. Have been in bands since they were kids. They're all they're old like me, but they've been in bands forever. So I'm the one that could use the practice. So eventually we'll all get together. But by the summertime I'd like to do some performances. I think I did a School of Rock thing a couple of times. You know about the School of Rock?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I did a couple of those, and that was fun.
I just can't wait for the simply written white cards you're going to give to your bandmates, like meet us backstage Thursday night, 8 p.m., the first meeting of your new band. That's pretty awesome, man. Well, on the show, we do ask our guests some kind of department questions. I was wondering if I can, like, you know, just throw something by you. Let me know what you think. First things first, man, do you believe in days off? And if so, what do you do?
Do I believe, you mean... For working people, do I believe in days off?
Just you doing absolutely nothing, nothing creative, nothing work related, just you being.
You know, I teach his own, man. You know, teach his own. I kept notes when I was an entrepreneur just to keep my sanity. I felt like every day I had to kind of like jot down my accomplishments just to give my sense of the accomplishing something. Because I don't know about you, but there's some days I feel like I'm not productive enough to be successful. Mm-hmm. So I made a habit of just at least every other day, just write down a few things I accomplished. And I was reading some of those recently when I was in my 30s doing this stuff. And I was working 7 days a week just because I was driven. You know what I'm saying? I loved what I did. I felt a certain amount of pressure, you know, because I was doing my own thing and I knew I had to be successful, but I just had an insatiable desire to keep learning new things. So for me, it never, I don't, you know, I wouldn't know what it, to me, just having a day doing nothing would be torture.
Right.
That would be torture. That would not be fun, you know? Unless I'm, you know, playing basketball or playing the guitar or doing, but you know, I did that anyway. So, I would always constantly just try to keep, you know, the analogy I use is, when you're in battle, your sword always has to be sharp.
Right.
So I would never allow my sword to get dull. So it's constantly sharpening the sword. And to me, that was just making sure that every day I did something to keep that sword sharp. Say that five times fast. Sword sharp.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same way when I travel. Like when I travel, I cannot just go just to relax. Like I always try to see if I can get a comedy show booking or do some content there because I feel like that makes it justified. I get to do something in an odd location. So I get it, man. I'm totally with you.
I remember when I went on a vacation when I was in my 40s, and I had to think back how long it had been since I'd taken a week off, and it was something like 14 years.
Oh, wow.
That it had been. Again, getting fired four times is a good motivator for this stuff. You know what I'm saying? When you get your ass kicked that seriously, that much in that time period, I think for me, that was a motivator to, you know, once you see a little, you see a little break in the traffic up ahead and you know, you just got to step on the pedal when the traffic ahead, you kind of clears away. You don't want to lift your foot off of that pedal. At least that's the way I was. So.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that week off after 14 years? Or kind of like, oh, this is miserable.
I did an Outward Bound. Do you know what Outward Bound is?
Not in this context. No,
they, you get to choose from various, it's basically a wilderness experience where you go with some guides and a few other people. And you're basically, in the wilderness for a week doing things like, whitewater rafting or mountain climbing or walking down a cliff on a rope and things like that. So that was my idea of a vacation, my first vacation. I did two Outward Bounds, and I did a third one, which was an adventure vacation, which was mountain biking for a week. So I'd like to, you know, challenge myself. I threw in a couple of Club Meds in there too.
Man's living a life of a dozen men. I love it. Do you collect something? And if so, what do you collect?
Songs. I just, you know, every, it just seems like, you know, since certainly since YouTube became a thing, I'll hear a song that I grew up with that I liked, and then I'll immediately go to YouTube or go to, you know, type in the song and chords on Google and figure out how to, learn it and start, you know, adding that to my repertoire. So I'm up to about close to 350 songs now. So I guess you could say songs.
Wow. That I'm inspired. Like, I can't say I'm jealous. I'm like inspired. Like, I want to learn some songs too. And a guitar and outward bound and break dance. I'll show you.
No. I did not say break dancing. No break dancing.
John, this has been so much
swing
fun.
Swing dancing. I love swing dancing.
Oh, that's cool. I did it once and I realized that it wasn't for me. I have no timing for that.
I got involved in that in Manhattan. I was going out 4 nights a week dancing for about 3 or 4 years in Manhattan. It was awesome.
So this was the swing music revival of the mid-90s, I assume?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There was a Gap there was a Gap commercial. I don't know if you remember it in the mid-90s.
I do. Yeah.
With the Stray Cats. And I don't know if that was it contributed to it, but there was a time, something in the mid-90s in Manhattan where that was like the thing, man. That was hot.
I grew up in Brooklyn and a swing dancing studio had opened up after that ad and it ran for like 2 or 3 years. And it was like weird because like a swing dancing studio, who would do that? It was packed for like 18 months. So it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Manhattan. It was big for about 3 or 4 years.
Well, but thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. If anyone wants to learn more about you and what you're about, how do they go about connecting with you, sir?
Well, they first of all need to know my name. And if they know my name, then they could just Google me. That would probably be the easiest.
Ah, G Cred in the house. What's up?
There you go. There you go.
15 years to get there, but I have it. Now you can put my name in Google and it works.
Yeah. There you go. G Cred.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. John, it's been so much fun. I want to have you back on later on because I think I am going to learn an instrument or some chords and then we can jam out digitally in the future.
All right.
This is New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's KNEW amsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.